There's no combination of words.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Insight Teen Hour. My name is Frederick. I'm from Insight Treatment Programs here in Santa Clarita. We are a teen intensive outpatient program and PHP program in our local community here. So today is Monday. It's 2 p.m. That means we're going to talk about something related to teen mental health. So in the studio today, I have a friend of ours, Katie Plum, who is who's clinical supervisor at another intensive outpatient program, Alternative Options, down in Artesia. That's a great program, too. They're obviously a little far away from here. But Katie promised to come into our show today to talk a little bit about brain spotting and EMDR, maybe, and sort of how trauma work can be very effective and very important as part of an intensive outpatient program. So Katie's going to describe some of those things for us, but Katie's also going to talk a little bit about her own history and her sort of life story, because I think our industry, we have a lot of therapists in our industry who are extremely good at what they do, and one of the reasons is that they have gone through some things themselves, usually, giving them some experiences in life that I think are extremely valuable for other kids and other parents to sort of gain from or learn from. So, Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Of course, you're more than welcome. It's great to have you. So, Katie, why don't we start talking a little bit about, you know, why are you so passionate about this field? Why do you love to work with teens and young adults the way you do? And Yeah.
This is, of course, a very long discussion that I'm going to try to condense. I have been a therapist for about 10 years now, and it wasn't necessarily the first thing I came out of school thinking I'm going to work with trauma specifically. You know, of course, you come to learn that trauma underlies so much of what you are working with, though. But so I did a stint in residential,
yes,
an eating disorder residential treatment center, and then I worked for DMH doing children and family care at a Medi-Cal clinic. So in both of those, trauma wasn't necessarily what I was like, okay, I'm going to go into this job. You know, I was fresh out of school, still learning. You don't learn everything in school. But so once I was in those systems, and I just realized how ill-equipped I was for what was truly being presented, especially at the Medi-Cal clinic, because the kids would come in, we have like a 6-month treatment plan for them, mm-hmm. do CBT, get them in and out, you know, and as you get to know them, like that oppositional defiant disorder is more of an attachment disorder, mm-hmm. and no amount of, well, 6 months or whatever of CBT is going to do that, no. You know, so that's why we kept seeing all the repeat clients coming in. So when I transitioned to Alternative Options, it's a treatment center that I feel very blessed that I landed at, because it really allowed me to kind of hone what I felt was important as a therapist and, you know, practice and do the things that seemed to be making sense for me, but weren't necessarily like this EBT, like, is what we have to follow here to the letter. So it sounds a bit experimental, which that's not the case, but it allowed me to really figure out, these are clients I like to work with, these are clients I don't like to work with, mm-hmm. and it gives us, to all of our therapists there, it's a pretty large organization, it gives you the time when you're getting your hours there to find out who you are as a therapist, mm-hmm. and who wants to see you. So that's a big part of it, that a lot of clients with significant trauma histories, attachment wounds, grief, sometimes personality disorders. Like, it was almost a joke at work that they just flocked to me.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm like, bring it on, you know? Mm-hmm. But so over the years, I, you know, with little trainings here and there about how to incorporate attachment-based work or art in trauma therapy, some DBT training, mindfulness training, so all those little pieces kind of coming together so that I was able to hold clients for a while as a trauma therapist, you know, do the cognitive reprocessing piece of it where mm-hmm. you tell your story, you get to make sense of it in a new way, do some narrative work. All of that is wonderful. What I found, though, is that there's such a limitation to what we can do with talk therapy. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really aware of that until I had experienced my own brain spotting therapy at the recommendation of a friend of mine, a colleague, given some things that was going that were going on for me at the time. We learn in school about the top-down versus bottom-up approaches, you know, going through the body versus going through the neocortex. Mm-hmm. It really became so evident to me how incredibly powerful it is to do the bottom-up approaches. Once these even pre-verbal traumas I had experienced were cleared out. And I'll go into, like, the clearing process of brain spotting a little bit, but, like, it just really – I had to get trained in it, essentially. Once I found it, I was referring my own trauma clients out to this woman who had treated me, you know. I was like, this is not ethical for me to keep her from them, but I'm losing my clients. But, yeah, it's just I don't have enough good things to say about this modality, and so I'll just kind of explain more of it. But that's essentially how I got to be this crazy brain-spotting champion over here.
So it's really your own experience at the end of the day and your own positive experience with it that made you go, wow, this is working. We need to have a stronger focus on this. We need to implement that into the program of alternative options and other places for that matter.
And, you know, there's so many great modalities out there. I work with IFS, internal family systems. You know, we no longer have an EMDR therapist on site right now, but at least at Artesia. But that, you know, EMDR is an incredibly effective treatment for some traumas. So it's not, I'm going to preface this that I know brain spotting is not the end all be all, but this is really my area of expertise that I've just seen such incredible results. So I do really want to spread the word about it. So I'm not sure where to begin. Maybe just what it would be like in a...
Maybe I think I would be curious. You know, you're talking about your own trauma. You're talking about your own history. If you wouldn't mind disclosing a little bit about, you know, where were you as a teenager? You know, what were you going through? What was sort of your... how did you feel back in the days when you were going through that time?
So whenever anybody asks, what were you like as a teenager, my mind immediately goes to when I was 14 years old, because that was a really, really critically big turning point. That's when my father died. Life was pretty complicated before that death. I had experienced outside the home some sexual abuse. My parents, as I alluded before we were talking in the show, that both have had extensive trauma histories that were very much untreated. But so that point at which my dad died was just the point where, you know, all those existential issues layer on top of this trauma you're carrying within you. So it was just very much a, oh, so nothing matters moment in my life. And I took that route for several years. 15, I was getting high at school. I became very promiscuous as a teenager for, you know, those classic reasons, like it filled something in me to be with people who seemed to be caring about me in that way. For a while as a teenager, I had started burning myself when the feelings were very, very unmanageable. I went through it. When I was 16, I was sexually assaulted, which kind of sealed the deal for me for a while of like, this is who I am. And that's it. Like, there's really a period on the end of that once that experience happened to me. I was very fortunate, though. I had a lot of what we talk about in resiliency research. I had a lot of these factors, like the adults outside of the family who were safe and trustworthy. I had my godmother, who was my mother's college roommate, didn't have to love me, but did. I had an art teacher at my high school who kept me from dropping out. You know, these things along the way that helped me survive. And given where my baseline was at that time, like I know I couldn't have without them. You know, my mom had me in therapy. I wish she had been doing her own. but yeah, I, with that type of stuff and that I was lucky, I was able to go to school, like to go off to college, things like that really started helping me take shape after all the trauma. Mm-hmm. But when I say I was surviving, it's so different. Like surviving feels okay at first, you know, like, okay, I found a rhythm of how to tread water here. But that treading when you're not really going anywhere, you're just subsisting, mm-hmm. gets pretty exhausting. Mm-hmm. So without having gone to the root of my trauma prior to this, even as life around me was getting better, you know, I went on to grad school in New York. I went to grad school out here. I started building a career. That process was really shaky. My foundation was, I mean, every day I'd come home from work and I was chronically suicidal. Mm-hmm. You know, when you leave those issues as though there's something you're going to leave behind in your teenage years because external things are improving, you know, I was 39 and just the only time I prayed was to please don't make me wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. And nobody would have ever known this. I finally told a best friend and her reaction kind of snapped me back into like, oh, this has gotten really far and I have a plan now and this is bad. So I've just, and speaking of that friend, like that's something in regards to like resiliency factors, I've always been so lucky to have someone to reach out to. Mm-hmm. And that's been a very conscious effort as an adult. So I think I'm kind of rambling off there.
No, on it's the, part of your story, right?
Yeah.
It's who you are today. It's what created you today, right? But you mentioned an interesting thing. You said this whole thing about, you know, I got to the realization that this is just who I am. And this is not going to change sort of thing. You said, I think word for word, you said, yeah, you said, this is who I am. I think it's an interest or an important thing to hold on to, because I think obviously not any kid is going through something as traumatic as what you went through. A lot of kids in an IOP program or PHP program doesn't have that level of trauma necessarily, but I think they all come in with that feeling of, look, this is who I am, this is not going to change, this is how I felt, whether it's because I have anxiety or whether it's because I have OCD, whether it's because I have trauma, but this is not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Leave me the heck alone. Don't think you can fix this, because I've tried it all, right? Yeah. I've tried to see a therapist. That didn't work, Frederick. I've tried to talk to my parents. That didn't work. I've tried to, you know, use drugs. That didn't work. I mean, it works in the moment. Don't get me wrong, usually, unfortunately. But the idea of, look, this is who I am. I'm broken. I'm damaged. There's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Leave me alone. I think a lot of kids, unfortunately, are feeling that.
Yeah,
that sense of hopelessness, the sense of this is just who I am. Yeah. Just leave me alone. And that's why they can take on risky behaviors. That's why they don't care anymore. That's why they do like you did, started using, right? Acting out, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one of the big things I think a treatment program needs to address is, right, to help these kids really understand that it can actually change.
Yeah.
They need to meet other kids who actually can show them that this can actually change. Not just the adults in the room, because often they don't really believe in the adults, right? It doesn't matter. Yeah. I'm sure you wouldn't have believed at the time in anybody that would show up at your doorstep and say, hey, look, this is going to change. Don't worry. It's going to change.
Right.
But other kids can usually or often help in that process, right?
Yeah.
Peer support.
Yeah, AO's program, we have an adolescent program. I'm seeing one of the clients there for brain spotting right now. And they get a chance to process in the PHP level and the IOP level, mm-hmm. all of kind of what you're talking about. The brain spotting piece seems to really, you know, just using him as an example, seems to really be something that sets it apart. You know, he, like I, had what you're describing, that existential, nothing matters, I've experienced what life can offer, and no thank you.
Yep.
That core message that I still get chills sometimes when clients will say something that, you know, like resonates so hard with you that, you know, I'm like, I can't tell you, but I know I understand. Please know I understand. But the tragic way he lost his mother and the trauma and grief mixed together, his core message is, why bother? Because no one will love me anyway. Mm-hmm. Why bother? Because this is all I'm supposed to be. Why bother? You know, all of those, like we were saying, the punctuation at the end of it, I find myself saying to clients so much, like, just let me hold on to the optimism. Because mm-hmm. you can't possibly imagine it. How can I expect you to imagine what hope feels like or what it's going to feel like on the other side? Because frankly, it took me till I was 40 to know what happiness felt like. Mm-hmm. I kept putting it off and putting it off myself because I was doing all this other work, you know, for other people. But I just hate how cliche it sounds. Like, there's another side. There's another mm-hmm. world out there for you. But it is so wildly different than what I ever could have imagined for myself. And most of my teenage clients sit down and they don't believe me where I was before. Like, I sit before them, a put-together middle-aged woman, and, that's not who I was until, like, through my 20s, man.
It's a long time to live like that, right? It's a long time. Yeah. I wish it would have been different, you know? We always hope that these kind of turnarounds would have happened earlier in life. But tell me, Katie, so are you saying, I mean, I know after the break we're going to talk more about, you know, the details of brain spotting, but are you sort of saying, look, the brain spotting process can help these kids sort of turn that around? Meaning that can help them sort of see that there is light at the end of the tunnel? Is that one of the advantages?
That's one of the advantages of it. It's not only used for trauma, and I'll get more into that with like the expansion versus activation.
Okay.
But sometimes instead of just excavating a trauma, like going in and releasing that area of the brain, other times we are going in and we are expanding a really positive potential. So for this kid, we did a message retrieval for I'm not lovable. No, actually, I was. And so with that brain spotting process, he got to remove the scary, dark messages that he had received both consciously and unconsciously, and they were replaced with I am infinitely lovable. Mm-hmm. So it has such wide applications, and it doesn't have to be like we're going in on a trauma memory, because we can go in on any effect of the trauma. We don't have to know what it is to know that it is a saying in brain spotting.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But maybe I know we only have like 2 minutes now, but could you just touch a little bit on what is the basics about brain spotting for those listeners out there? Mm-hmm. Let's just start the conversation a little bit.
So brain spotting harnesses this natural reflex we have in our brain-body connection to identify and heal traumas that are kind of held in these capsules in the brain. What brain spotting does through fixed eye position, as opposed to, you may have seen in EMDR, people move their eyes back and forth. In brain spotting, I will, with my wand or just by watching you when you talk, I'm going to catch your gaze and you're going to freeze it there. While your eyes are in that position, I always try to explain it like you keep your eyes in that position, but you're not really looking at my pointer. You're looking inside, and all of the stuff that's going to be coming out, some of it's going to be trauma, some of it's going to be a childhood TV commercial jingle. Mm-hmm. All of it's going to come out. You mindfully watch it, and then the spot heals up, and you are free from everything it held before. Mm-hmm. So that's brain spotting.
Very short version of brain spotting. Awesome. Well, unfortunately, we have to go into a little break, Katie. But when we'll come back, we'll talk more about what brain spotting is and give some examples. And so hang in there. And you're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM, and this is the Insight Teen Hour every Monday between 2 and 3 p.m.
There's no combination of words.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. I'm Frederick from Insight Treatment Programs here in Santa Clarita. So we're back, and I got Katie Plum here in the studio, who's a therapist and who is clinical supervisor at Alternative Options, and intensive outpatient programs for teens and young adults, if I'm not
mistaken. And adults, yeah. Exactly. We do 12 up to...
Young adults, at least.
Yeah.
Katie's here in the studio because she's talking to us about, you know, brain spotting or trauma work in general. And I'm very interested in that because at Insight, we actually don't use brain spotting at this point. So it's sort of, I'm learning too as we're going through this. Mm-hmm. So Katie, let's back up a little notch here. Tell us again about brain spotting. Like, what is it? How would you define it, or what is it really about? I know it's different from EMDR because you don't have the eye movement process in it. Mm-hmm. But can you tell us a little bit again?
Yeah.
Summarize, what is it about?
So, brain spots themselves are where those neural networks that got tangled with trauma happening. Maybe you're having a sensory experience at the same time the trauma is happening, a bodily experience. All of this information is firing and wiring together. And so it gets locked in these trauma capsules deep in the subcortical region of the brain, even down into the brainstem if it's something that happened pre-verbally. So with what we call the fixed eye position, we can unlock those. So the fixed eye, I usually have people, if I'm just doing it, like I do a brain spotting group. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I ask somebody, can you recall the first name of your first grade teacher? Just go through your mind, see if you can go back, look for that information in your brain. And then notice, where have your eyes been? So typically when we are thinking of past experiences that are positive, our eyes might be in one direction. And it's not a grid that is exact each time, but it's going to be a different direction when we're thinking of, a bodily-based trauma sensation. Mm-hmm. So the eye position is like the access point. I almost think of it as like a laser coming in through your eyes and then following that path back through the it gets to bypass the neocortex, and that's why it's better than talk therapy in my mind, because that gets in the way. But it bypasses the neocortex going in through the eye and then gets into the limbic and subcortical region, more subcortical regions like the brainstem, like I mentioned. So within those areas, the limbic system is where we have our emotion centers, our memory center, those areas that get really tangled up, and the trauma memories stay frozen and buried rather than safely reprocessed and put away. So reprocess means simply like, oh, that was an experience I had. It's in the past. Maybe I've even grown since then, but it's in the past. I'm safe today. But when various types of traumas are experienced, especially with complex PTSD, when they're experienced in that way where I'm
don't worry at all. Yeah. It's complicated to keep talking this long, right?
Yeah. All the time. I lost my train of thought.
But let's go back to the idea of the group. So because I think it is very interesting. How do you – explain a little again. How do you run a group on this topic? So usually I would think, hey, it's a one-on-one thing. You need to be very mm-hmm. mindful of where the eyes move or don't move. And how do you do this in a group experience when there's only one facilitator who knows about brain spotting?
So – one of the principles of brain spotting that you do when you're one-on-one mm-hmm. Is called the dual attunement framework, which means I am attuning to you, that's the client, noticing every twitch, every yep. reflex that is happening for you while you are attuning to your inner experience, and some part of your brain is aware of me holding this frame for you, mm-hmm. right? So the main difference with group brain spotting is we have to make it group attunement. So to that end, we actually – the eye positioning part is pretty easy. Once you have techniques to find brain spots with people, that's less the issue of needing to use the wand or whatever mm-hmm. it is. But it's about getting people to feel safe in this like little nest that mm-hmm. we're creating where really intense healing can happen with others around them. So to that end, we do a lot of TheraPlay. We do a lot of relaxation exercises, mindfulness exercises to make it like a very cohesive group experience. Mm-hmm. And then there's some specific setups that allow you to titrate a bit more. like how much traumatic material are you going to release. Titrate a bit more than you do in session. Session, we have other resources that we can use, but the setups and group brain spotting are because it's cumbersome to be like, okay, you put your eye patch on over here, you use the Z axis over here, so we just do different setups for it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm using terms that probably are Greek to listeners who don't.
Well, I mean, we're learning, right? Yeah, we're all learning. But you said eye patch, so you're using eye patches as well as part of the group experience?
So the eye patch is used when we need to do more resourcing. And this is something I really like about brain spotting versus EMDR, because we have these resources in us. We don't have to do several sessions of instilling an external, like, resourcing process, like doing the butterfly hug, doing breathing, stuff like that. All very important, and you should be getting that from your therapist, no matter what.
Got it.
But for brain spotting,
we were talking about when you're in the group and you put the patch on.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, that was my
question. Yeah. So with the eye patch, sometimes if you get so activated that it's like, I need to jump out of this, which truly you don't.
Okay.
But if it's – you're the one who's empowered to decide, I need to stop this now or I can keep withstanding it. If it gets so, you know, dysregulating but it seems like we're on a good path – I might ask you, okay, cover one of your eyes while you still look at the spot. Wait a few seconds. Now cover the other eye. We're going to look at that same spot. Which one felt less activated? Because we can split the difference sometimes and turn down the volume of the activation by cutting off one of the eyes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So that's why I have all my group members have eye patches ready to go so that they don't have to jump out and like reground. They have a skill right there that will just
slow things down a little bit. Yeah. And when you say when they their focal point or what they're looking at, what would that be?
So in individual session or if somebody's struggling in group, I use a wand, kind of like one of those teacher's telescopic pointers. And with that, I just slowly track it across their line of vision. And I'm looking for wobbles, flinches, reflexes of any kind. When they're able to access it themselves, like be attuned to like little shifts that happen in the body, new thoughts that are popping up, they do what's called inside window. So I just instruct them, look left, look center, look right, and you spend 10 seconds on each, seeing where does it feel more connected to this issue we're brain spotting today.
Uh-huh. And when you do it in a group setting, does everybody then or every other person have a wand that they do it? Or no, you're still the only one who is managing that process.
Yeah. Okay. So they recommend if you have – I've found that if I have more than 8 clients, I like to have a backup person just to help hold the frame. They don't need to know how to brain spot. They just need to be there to, like, if somebody does get very dysregulated, I have these little grounding distress cards. So they have a neon card they hold up, and then the assistant can go help them ground if the eye patch isn't working for them.
Got it. Okay.
So it's just a lot of safety measures that we put into place.
Who do you feel, Katie, when you're working with these kids, who do you feel really benefit from? So obviously – typically, the ones with some trauma would benefit. But is there a certain type of personalities as well? Do you have kids that traditionally would not benefit because they don't want to engage? They don't have the mindset to do it? They just don't believe in that kind of stuff? Like, how would you describe to me which clients typically would actually benefit or which clients typically would not benefit because they're just not in a mindset where they can do this?
The biggest thing that I think is important for brain spotting is just a willingness to experience. The brain has to show you and make you feel these things again as a final push before you're free from them. Some people don't feel that they can trust themselves enough to even approach the issue. They're so scared of what emotions might do. They may have had it modeled to them in a certain way that it's really unhealthy almost to delve into this stuff. So that would take some, I would say, convincing. What makes it so great, especially the group format for adolescents, is that it incorporates, like I was saying, play, incorporates art and movement, but it also is silent. So if you have a kid that doesn't feel like talking because talking's never worked before, mm-hmm. well, yeah, I'm with them. I'm like, just witness. Let's mm-hmm. see if we can change it that way. And a lot of kids get more engaged because it just changes the paradigm of what they, you know, maybe this idea of what therapy was supposed to have done and hasn't done for them yet. It's very, very empowering because they can talk. Mm-hmm. They can tell me everything happening for them, or they can tell me nothing.
Yeah. And I think often, right, kids that come into intensive outpatient program or PHP program, many of them has unfortunately learned over the years to shut down their emotional world, right? They can't. I wouldn't say they don't want to. That's yeah. actually not true. My personal belief is that they want to, but they just don't know how to express their emotional world because they've been shutting it down as long as they can remember, right?
Yeah.
Not wanting to feel that feeling of anxiety or not wanting to feel that feeling of abandonment has been so important to them mm-hmm. that when you ask them about some of these things and you want to do talk therapy or process work, it can be very challenging in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And things like art therapy or some more of the creative therapies, right, modalities can be very, very helpful mm-hmm. For those kids. So it makes sense for those kids who doesn't maybe want to talk so much that this could be a great alternative.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was saying with the traumas not being the only thing, it's really if we're doing the activated model, which is the excavation of these capsules, it's really anything that keeps us stuck, mm-hmm. you know? So you don't have to come in and say, I've experienced all these traumas. Well, first of all, you probably have, but you may not be aware of it, and you don't need to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. We don't need to give you memories back of things that your brain tucked away. You're still reacting and being triggered by them, so we can take that piece away for you.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you say is sort of kids who would be very anxious and therefore get stuck in certain behaviors because they just, you know, their anxiety comes up and they just can't move on from there. Those kind of behaviors you can also address through
there's actually a specific, even for OCD, which requires specialized training, truly. It's referred to too many interns, I think. But OCD has there's a setup for that in brain spotting that mm-hmm. Can break the connection of these false thoughts, the power of them, so that they become, you know, and in good OCD treatment, there's a lot of shifting that, like, okay, thought, you're not mine. I don't need to listen to you. But brain spotting kind of frees that connection up.
Mm-hmm. And also, I feel what you're saying, Katie, is that brain spotting doesn't necessarily have to be about reliving your trauma, as you said.
Right.
Right? It could be really about focusing on some of the positive things as well and move on from there. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, I have a client who was a screenwriter, mm-hmm. writer's block, mm-hmm. and we just did what's called the expansion model to tap into her creative potential, and, you know, it makes you feel full and vigorous and just expansive. It's mm-hmm. the perfect word for it. Because these anchoring qualities and potentials that we have within us are there. We just have to ignite the spark.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I the reason why I keep mentioning this is because I feel a lot of people sort of tend to believe that when it comes to trauma work and when it comes to EMDR or brain spotting, it's crucial that the client will go through their trauma, relive their trauma again and again. And that could be a reason why they're sort of like, no, this is not for me or this is not for my teen. But what I'm learning is that that's not really necessarily the case. Yes, of course, it is important eventually to be able to maybe talk about. But it's not all about being in a session and just having to feel this feeling or relive this trauma again and
right.
again.
And if you don't mind, I can give a personal example.
Please.
Of like how it can take a really complex issue on. So when I was doing the first or second phase training of brain spotting, I got to do a demo, which just means in front of the whole training group, the master brain spotter does a session on you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, I mentioned a little bit about my parents' trauma. At this point, my mom was homeless, having really turned to drugs and not able to make decisions for herself that were acceptable. since my dad died, it was this feeling of like I was going down with her. And in this brain spotting session, I didn't even realize I had the feeling of somebody choking me for years and years and years. And when we're focusing on this stuff with my mom, yes, stuff about my dad's death came up. Yes, other times I haven't felt protected by her came up. But there, for me, it was like parts of scenes that would go by. And you just, almost like you're on a roller coaster ride, you're just kind of holding on. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I didn't like that reminder. But then it passes on and, oh, I feel really grateful right now. And then maybe that will move into, oh, I want to hit something. I'm so mad that I'm stuck with this. But it just keeps moving. And as you stay with that movement, by the end, it's like a lightness that can take over. It's not just that you don't feel bad anymore. It's replaced with something really, really good.
Valuable. Yeah. Well, I know we have to go into a little break in a minute, but I think it is, yeah, it's very interesting how you can work with it in a group setting and with teens, right? What about the kids that are defiant? They don't want to do this. They, no, this kind of stuff doesn't work for me. Like, I feel that often when it comes to regular process groups, you don't necessarily need to want to do it. Just to be part of it and sort of, you don't have to necessarily engage. You can just sit and listen, and mm-hmm. things will seep in, right? I always tell, we're planting some seeds and we don't know exactly when it's going to grow. That is not really the case when it comes to brain spotting. Is that correct? Like you do need to have some sort of engagement. You do need to want to be willing to do some of this stuff. Is that
right? Oh, yeah. Some engagement is necessary, but I find like, I don't know. There's certain periods where we have groups at AO that are just off the chain. Like, yeah, of course. Where did these kids come from? but for the most part, I think if you have an ability to rapport with the kids, mm-hmm. you do need their buy-in, but it's not extra difficult, don't think. Yeah.
Good. So you can still do it as a group. You can still get most of the kids to join and participate.
And when they see other kids really getting a lot out of it, that helps with the buy-in.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, we got to go into a little break here. You're listening to KHTS 98.1 FM, and this is the Insight Teen Hour. In the studio today, we've got Frederick, myself from Insight, and Katie Plum from Alternative Options, who's here to tell us a bit about brainstorming. But we'll be back in a few minutes.
There's no combination, no words.
So welcome back to the Insight Teen Hour. So here in the studio today, I got Katie Plum, who's clinical supervisor at Alternative Options. And Katie, we're talking about, you know, brain spotting. You're explaining to us what that's all about. I know a lot of our listeners obviously are parents with teenagers who are struggling in some way. And obviously a lot of the work we do at Insight is sort of parent work, right, is to help them realize what's their issues sometimes and separate them from what the kids are going through. But tell us a little bit about how you can work with parents and how brain spotting can really affect them in a positive way and help them become better parents or help them in their relationship with mm-hmm. their teens.
Yeah, so with adult clients I have where I see them individually, I've seen incredible change in just the attachment piece of it. Mm-hmm. So parents who are really uncomfortable with affection from their kids or almost even feel repulsed by their kids' bids for attention, you know, those are trauma responses those parents have had. And I've had so many people come in because they want to work on their trauma, and then they're very surprised at how much it improves things with their family, because when we're so in the trauma, we think it's very about us. Mm-hmm. But once we're free from it, we realize, oh, it was the whole system our trauma was acting on. So I do see how useful it is in that way. I've done some sessions with parents and teenage kids, though. And in that, because what we know about how much our own past influences who we are today mm-hmm. and who we see when we're looking at this little creature that we're raising. Because in that moment of conflict, you know, if we're unresolved, if we have unresolved traumas, that kid yelling in your face and telling you you're stupid is suddenly the bully on the playground, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, it's relatively easy to have children for a lot of people, very difficult to know even where to begin to unwind your own trauma. That's, you know, you will really see the impact on with the kids later on, right? So something that we do is called co-regulation with parents and teens to help them work through their stuck point as the unit. Mm-hmm. So maybe the stuck point is mom is feeling really overwhelmed and disregarded, and kid is feeling intruded upon and disregarded in their own way. Mm-hmm. So we can use that as kind of the point to go with, and then bring their regulation capacities together so that they're more like working in a team kind of sense by the end of that session.
Uh-huh.
Emotionally.
Yeah. Do you do that in your private practice, or do you do that as part of
I do it in private practice. Okay. I see more teens at AO, though, at alternative options.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because here at the end of the show, obviously, if people out there or if parents out there would be interested, then I hope you can.
Yeah, my private practice is in Long Beach.
Okay, yeah. Does all of this has to be in person, or do you sometimes do it remote?
Yeah, actually, most of the trainings, because I was trained in COVID era. Mm-hmm. I guess we still are, but during quarantine. So everything was adapted to be able to do on Zoom.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's interesting, of course, because what I hear from parents at Insight always is the same thing, which is, you know, things really started to improving with my son or daughter when I started working on some of my stuff, right?
Yeah.
When I realized that, hey, look, I'm part of this process. I have to adjust and I need to address some of the things that I'm struggling with as well. That's when the teen starts working even harder and when we
yeah,
really
they
start
notice.
Seeing, they notice, yeah. right? And they obviously, just my little perspective, but I feel often they feel that they're sick and tired of them being the ones that are broken and feeling broken. And they like to hear when the family sort of take a collective approach to this and
yeah.
and collective responsibility, right? And, hey, honey, I'm sorry you have to be at Insight. I'm sorry you have to go through treatment, but, you know, we all need it. This is important. This is not just for you. It's a family treatment program.
Yeah.
And we all need to do our part. And mom is doing her part or dad is doing his part. And you have to do your part. We all need to change our perspective a bit. And we all need to make some progress, right?
Yeah.
So definitely family work is important. And I'm glad you're doing some brain spotting with the parents.
Yeah.
I think their relationship to their teens can really improve. And, yeah, it will make a difference for the teens.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yes. Most definitely.
Right.
Yeah. It's just incredible seeing people emerge from their past.
Yeah. When you do it, just out of curiosity, when you do it remotely, how do you do that? Just on the screen and then you still have your wand. It's still the same concept.
Yeah.
It's still the same.
So something like expansion, most likely I'm not going to use the wand for on the screen because
okay.
it limits it. And expansion is unlimited. Mm-hmm. Unlimitless or whatever. but yeah, so I might have them do gaze spotting instead of using the wand. But yeah, it works just the same.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah. And do you feel that one is better than the other? Like in person, it actually has a better outcome than doing it remote or
it's for parents? It's up to the person.
Okay.
So it's not that one works better than the other. It just depends on the person. So for people who have a safe environment at home, you know, they don't mm-hmm. live with a perpetrator. They have their little sanctuary in their room. It can feel good to do it at home. For people who don't have the privacy or the stability at home, they tend to be much better off doing it in person with me.
Okay. Makes yeah. sense. Well, I think the show is coming to an end here, and I want to make sure that – okay, I just want to make sure that you have time to sort of – tell the audience out there, you know, how they can get hold of you and whether they can get hold of alternative options and who you guys are servicing. And so everybody is mindful of that.
Yeah. So Alternative Options is, as you said, in Artesia, California. And it serves – we have an adolescent program and an adult program, both of which have chemical dependency, eating disorder, and mental health. Trauma ends up being kind of the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of different groups, you know, both IOP and PHP level there. And I run a trauma group, just like a classic kind of process trauma group. And then the two brain spotting groups I have, one at AO and one in my private practice. Mm-hmm. To reach me personally, my email address is hello@katieplum-lcsw.com. So KATIEPLUMB-LCSW.com.
Perfect. Do you take insurance as payment? Is it private pay in your private practice?
At Alternative Options, I do take insurance. I'm on a few panels there. I know like Blue Shield and a couple mm-hmm. others. My wait list is a little bit longer there, and then I do cash and super bills in my private practice.
In private practice. Okay, yeah. Great. Well, Katie, thank you very much for joining the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for telling us about brain spotting and trauma work in general, but brain spotting particularly.
Yeah, spread the word.
Yeah, exactly. good. Well, tune in next Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. That's when we have the Inside Teen Hour, and we'll talk about more issues related to teen mental health. So we'll be back next Monday. Thank you very much. Things I have to do, but if all of these dreams might find their way into my day-to-day scene, I'd be under the impression I was somewhere in between, with only two, just me and you. Not so many things we got to do, or places we got to be. We're